I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Okay, and it's time once again for yet another 13 o'clock movie retrospective.
Yeah, this one is They Live, a classic.
Yeah,
John Carpenter.
Yeah, we've done a lot of John Carpenter movies on this show.
He's one of my favorite directors.
He is, I really like a lot of his movies. And, you know, we own a lot of his movies, so that's probably why we've done so many of them.
Yeah, making a whole collection of him on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
All of his good stuff, though. There's, you know, I wasn't too big in, like, Big Trouble, Little China.
Vampires.
Yeah, vampire. We'll see. I'll get to it when time comes.
I didn't like, what was the one with the green goo in the canister?
Green goo in the canister.
Prince of Darkness?
Yeah, that's right.
I wasn't too crazy about that one.
Yeah, a little weird.
Yeah, it was a little uneven. Right. I thought it was kind of a cool idea, but I don't think it was that well executed.
Well, John Carpenter's entire career, I think, is a little uneven. He has hits and he has misses.
Yeah. And I think we talked about that last time. Like, I feel like, you know, 75-80%, maybe 90% of his movies are good. But then there's like a handful that I'm just kind of like, meh.
They Live was a hit, if you ask me. I think that it was a weird mixture of a really good story, good acting, and a really low budget.
Yeah.
This movie was made for like nothing. I think it was like
less than $3 million.
Yeah, less than $3 million. And I think it grossed like $13 million at the box office.
Yeah, it was a success, actually.
Success, yeah.
It was number one, like the number one movie for a couple weeks in a row. It came out in 1988.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing about this is that John Carpenter, I mean, he pretty much... Did he write the main role with Roddy Piper in mind?
Yeah,
I think he did, because I guess John Carpenter was like a big wrestling fan.
Yeah, and he knew
Piper. And he had met Piper like backstage.
You met him too, though.
I didn't meet him. I saw him at a horror convention.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was funny because it was a horror convention, so I expected everyone to ask him about They Live, but everybody asked him about wrestling.
Yeah.
So I was just kind of like, I don't watch wrestling, so I didn't know any of what they were talking about. But the interesting thing about Roddy Piper in this is that, like, he's not a good actor. I don't think I'd go that far. But he's good in this because he's like an everyman.
Right.
Like, he's just like a regular person. Like, you don't get the sense that he's acting so much as you're just kind of filming someone, like, going about their regular day.
Carpenter knew him. Carpenter said that he was just like a nice, everyday guy.
Yeah.
That everybody could relate to. And there wasn't any pretension in Roddy.
Yeah.
You know, Piper was just a nice guy. And he didn't really have to do a whole lot of acting because he was kind of playing himself. Evidently, that's what he was like.
Yeah, because I think, again, that's probably why John Carpenter picked him for this role, because... One, he seems, because we have the Blu-ray of it, and we listened to the commentary with Roddy Piper and John Carpenter. And like you said, Roddy Piper seemed like a super nice man, like super humble and all this other stuff. Very self-deprecating, very funny. He had actually had a lot of problems of his own, like with homelessness and things like that. So he could relate to this character, I think. And he didn't really have to stretch all that much to play this role.
Yeah, and this had another one of my favorite actors in there. His name was Keith David.
Yeah.
All right. And Keith David was the black guy from The Thing.
Yeah.
You know, he played Childs. And Childs was kind of like, he was kind of co-starring with the Krussel.
Yeah.
So there's like, there's this connection between the Krussel and David. Keith David.
And you know, if you listen to our last one, where we talked about 6 degrees of Krussel.
Yeah, that's right. So you have a situation where you have Keith David, you have John Carpenter, and the shadow of Krussel is, you know what I'm talking about?
Is
kind of cast
there
on this film.
Okay.
That's right.
All right.
There's a relation there.
So he's not close. So like Krussel isn't in it, but he's kind of in it in spirit.
He's in it in spirit. That's how
that works.
That's how I see it. This is how it's seen through the eyes of Ross. You know what I'm talking about? Part of mine.
The eyes of
kind of like my Krussel bromance, Krussel based bromance.
I know.
Yeah.
Is it? This is going to become a running joke on the show, just like our "Where's That Raccoon?" and you know, "Man Said I Could." This will be like every episode now. You have to bring up Krussel in some way.
Well,
it doesn't matter like how labyrinthine the connection is.
Well, Krussel also worked with Quentin Tarantino, and I went to school with Quentin Tarantino.
So you're related.
I'm part of the Krussel sphere.
Wow.
It's like not the chronosphere, but the Krusselsphere.
If you could like see, like my mind is being blown right now, just like scanners.
That's right. Yeah, you didn't know that.
No, I didn't.
No, I'm
so vague. Now I guess, I guess that's my association with Krussel too.
That's right.
I'm related through you.
Related to Krussel through me.
All right. So, yeah, so Keith David was in The Thing, and John Carpenter liked him so much that he wrote the role of Frank in They Live, specifically for Keith David also. Yeah.
Keith and Piper actually became good friends on this film. Keith David kind of taught Roddy kind of how to act, and they would, like, go to lunch together in character and just pretend like they were their characters.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? For like days on end. So evidently there was kind of like some male bonding going on in the real world between Keith David and Roddy Piper.
Which is
that's kind of cool.
And yeah, that's one of the things that I thought was really cool about listening to the commentary on this movie was that Roddy Piper, I mean, he took this acting job very seriously.
Yeah, right.
And he was like, you know, he wanted all the tips people could give him. Right. And he was like always asking John Carpenter. He's always asking Keith David, what should I do? How should I do this? And stuff like that. So like I said, he's like a very humble dude. He wasn't cocky at all.
Right.
You know, he knew that he was, you know, that he didn't have the acting chops that maybe some of the other people on the movie had. And so he was like constantly asking for advice and stuff like that. But like I said, I think his lack of acting experience kind of lent something to this movie.
Yeah. Actually, watching this movie with the commentary is awesome.
Yeah.
With Piper and
John Carpenter
talking.
Yeah. I enjoyed it very much.
Oh, man, I did terrible right there. You know what
I mean? I know.
No, man, you did fine.
Yeah.
If you didn't do well, then I wouldn't put it in there. You know what I mean? That kind of stuff. Oh, man, I didn't do good there. You know?
It
sounds good.
Well, it's so funny because I can see, like, I could never, I don't think I would ever make a good actor because I'm too, like, self-conscious.
Yeah.
And I can imagine, like, how fucking horrifying it must be to, like, have to watch yourself on screen. I don't even like listening to our own podcast back because I don't really like listening to myself talk.
Yeah.
So it's like, if you had to see your big ass face like up on the movie screen and stuff like, oh God, I would hate that. I would hate that.
Yeah.
And I would be just like Roddy Piper on that fucking, I'd just be like, oh my God, I suck so bad. I can't even look. You know what I mean? It would be like that, but he doesn't suck. He's awesome in this.
Yeah. There's a lot. This movie's just awesome because there's a lot of like really classic memes in it, you know, putting the glasses on. And, you know what I mean?
It really made a huge cultural impact, I think, that was kind of greater than its box office would have suggested, I guess, is what I'm saying.
If you don't know the premise, this is about a guy who's homeless, and he ends up in a homeless camp, and it's right next to this church. And this church has something clandestine going on in it. Roddy Piper plays a guy, his name is never mentioned in the film, but he's accredited as Nada.
Is
his name, which means nothing. And in Spanish, he goes into this church and he finds these boxes of sunglasses that are being made in this church. And he can hear, like, in other rooms, revolutionaries talking, you know, how are we going to get this to the people, blah, 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 blah. Well, later on, he steals a pair of those glasses and later on he puts them on. And when he puts them on, he sees in black and white and he sees that all the ads have all these subliminal messages. All the TVs are given these subliminal messages. And it's things like sleep, you know. It says
conform.
Conform, yeah.
Marry and reproduce. That was one of them.
That's right. All the dollar bills said, this is your God.
Yeah.
And then he finds out that some of the people are not people. That
they're aliens.
They're like an alien. And they look kind of like skulls. And what's his name? Carpenter calls them ghouls.
Yeah.
Because I guess they're kind of like the living dead. You know what I mean? But they're the people that suck the life out of you.
Yeah. And this was actually, the kernel of the story actually came from a sci-fi story called 8 o'clock in the Morning. And it was actually published in the 60s. Now, Carpenter kind of took it in his own direction because in the original story, I have not read it, but according to
Wiki, I thought it was a comic book.
It started out as a short story,
okay.
It was adapted like in a comic later on. And actually, it's kind of different. It's it has to do with a guy who's put into a trance by a stage hypnotist, and then when he wakes up, he realizes that all of the human race has been hypnotized by aliens and that these aliens are controlling humans. So it's a similar premise.
And they're these horrible monsters.
Yeah.
And I think the original story, it only takes place in one day. The guy goes on a shooting rampage.
Yeah.
Shooting all these horrible monsters. Of course, you know, nobody else sees these monsters.
Right.
So it's being, you know, everybody thinks it's just a mass shooting, mass murder going on.
Right.
And you're not really sure whether or not he's imagining these monsters or if these monsters actually exist.
Whereas in They Live, it's pretty clear that
the monsters exist
because as soon as you put the glasses on, or later on they make contact lenses that do the same thing, you know, it's pretty clear that these people that look like humans, some of them are aliens. Now, one thing that always kind of like, maybe, I don't know, I don't want to say it bothers me about this movie, but here's the thing. Okay, so Nada discovers, like kind of accidentally through coming across the sunglasses and stuff like that, that when he puts the glasses on, he can see all the subliminal messages, he can see all the propaganda, he can see the people that are aliens. Mm-hmm. Now, I try to put myself in the shoes of the person. I said, now, if I put on a pair of sunglasses and suddenly saw that, I would not immediately think that I was seeing reality. I would think these are trick sunglasses. I mean, isn't that the first thing you would think?
Yeah, but he was taking them on and off, and he was really verifying it that they did work. Remember?
I guess so.
And then he started actually talking to the aliens, making fun of them. Boy, you are ugly.
Yeah.
And then they reported it. Remember, they got on the watches. Yeah. We have one of them that can see.
Yeah.
But he ends up going back to the homeless camp, and he hooks up with Keith David, who's playing a character named Frank.
Yeah. Remember? Who's his buddy, like on the construction site where he found some work.
Now, Nada had just gone on this shooting rampage, and some of the aliens that he killed were alien cops.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's wanted by the law. He goes back to the camp, and he tries to get his buddy Frank to put the glasses on to see.
Right.
And he won't put them on.
It's like a hilarious thing.
He throws him some money, and he's like, get out of here. No, I don't want to put on the glasses. And they get in this long, huge fight scene.
Yeah, it's like 6 minutes long.
It's probably one of the longest fight scenes. And it is funny, you know, and it's pretty good. And the idea was, during the commentary, you find out that it was kind of a trope of the white man fighting to put the glasses on the black man to show him who the real oppressor was.
Right.
And, you know, that they actually said that. So it wasn't just, you know, it just didn't look that way. That's the way it was intended. It's pretty cool, you know.
But the fight scene in there is like famous just because it goes on for like a ridiculously long time. It's like you think it's over and then it starts back up again.
Right.
And then he's like all these wrestling moves.
Right.
And evidently they practiced it for like 3 weeks. Yeah. So it's like super choreographed. It looks really good.
Yeah.
And these two guys are like clearly really like kind of beating the shit out of each other.
And evidently, you know, Piper said that Keith David wasn't really a skilled wrestler, and wrestlers can pull punches, and they're fake fighters.
Yeah.
They can do that without hurting each other. He said that Keith was actually hurting him in a couple places. But, you know, that he did get hurt.
But there are, you know, like, you can't really see, obviously, in the movie, but some of the, like, pavement, like, on the ground of the alley where they're fighting and stuff like that is kind of soft.
Yeah, it's rubber.
So, yeah, so, like, when they hit it, it doesn't hurt them and stuff like that. But still, I mean, you can tell that they really use like some real life wrestling moves and shit like that. Yeah. But I think that fight scene is just like so iconic just because it goes on for such a long time. It's almost like, I don't know, it's like this weird absurdist joke like in the middle of the whole. And I'm just like, just put the fucking glasses on. Yeah. You know what I mean? Just make him happy. Humor the guy.
Eventually he puts the glasses on and he sees what's going on. And he's finally like, wow, you know, it's true. That type of deal. And they hook up with the rebellion that's trying to overthrow these aliens, and they end up being on a mission where they're going to go into this television station and get to the roof and destroy this transmitter. And this transmitter is what's broadcasting the signal that cloaks all these aliens.
Right, yeah.
And cloaks all this subliminal messaging on the television screens and in the, you know, on the billboards. So if they can blow up that transmitter, everyone can see.
Then everyone will be able to see who's the aliens and who's not.
And they've, you know, of course, eventually get it done. You know, I'm not going to really spoil everything. If you haven't seen it, go see it. But it's a really good movie. I would say not quite as cool as Escape from New York, but it has its own mojo. It has its own thing.
It's a totally different kind of movie than Escape from New York. It's like, I don't know what it is. It's like this really, I guess it's marginally sci-fi, I suppose, but it's kind of
political
like
commentary too.
Yeah, it's like a political satire kind of also. But it's like, one thing I have to say that I mean, I know that, you know, it was made in 1988 and the kind of, what is that noise?
Yeah, she's trying to get the closet.
Oh, this kitten.
Yeah.
What? Peep.
Go ahead.
She's going to come right back in.
Leave it alone.
So, like, it was made in 1988, so some people might think, oh, the aliens look weird or look stupid or whatever. Because yeah, they're real low-tech like, phrases. They are, like, low-tech, but there's some kind of, like, weird charm about them. There's, like, these bright red and blue colors. It's, like, it looks like...
The movie's not supposed to look realistic anyway.
And also, fun fact... Almost all the ghouls that you see in that movie were played by one guy.
Yeah, played by the same guy.
Like, he would put on, like, different outfits. Whether they were male or female, it's the same guy. Yeah, it didn't matter. Like, because he was the one that had all the makeup on and the appliances. And they said, hey, put on this fur coat and be a lady. And put on this, put on a cop uniform. Put on the... So pretty much every time you see a ghoul in that movie, it's the same dude.
Yeah, I think this movie is what inspired that guy to believe in reptilians.
You know, David Icke or whatever his name is.
Right.
Maybe he thought this was a documentary.
Yeah, he thought it was a documentary. Now David Icke did the reptilian things and the New World Order crap. And, really, I think that evolved into the kind of the Alex Jones idea of the globalists. Because, you find out that this is an alien effort to swallow up all the nations of the earth and put them under their dominion. And they're doing it for profit.
Yeah. They're like, it's basically like yuppie aliens. Like all the yuppies that you see are aliens. Basically.
Yeah, every time you see a rich person in real life, you put the glasses on and they're the aliens.
Yeah. And then there are also some humans, too, that are like sleeper agents. Like like the character of, should I spoil it?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, but you know, there are humans working with them.
There are humans that know about it and that are working with them, so they're like traitors.
Right.
And there are a couple of those in the movie.
The Carpenters did say that real life events inspired him to write this film. In the commentary, he's saying that it was based upon like Reaganomics. And he said that he based these people on Republicans, like, you know, hardcore capitalists. But there's a lot of controversy about who it is he's talking about. You can interpret it many different ways. It's kind of left open to interpretation. Some people are going to say that it's the reptilians or the globalists or international communists. Some people even say that it's Jews, that what they're talking about. But I think it's more like the Alex Jones concept of globalists. That's what I think.
Well, it's just rich elitists is pretty much what he's talking about.
Rich elites that are trying to manipulate the global system to get rid of country sovereignty. And sovereignty is what kind of protects individual citizens and guarantees their rights. So, yeah, international crony capitalism, maybe international... communism, you can interpret it any way you want to, I guess. Anything that's bad.
And yeah, well, and like I said, they're definitely aliens. They're definitely like controlling the earth for some purpose. I don't think they really specify what the aliens' endgame is or what they want. You know, they're just pretty much exploiting humans on the planet. Maybe they do it to other planets. We don't really know.
Yeah.
But they do have like little drones that look like 50s era flying saucers.
Yeah, with little electric eyes hanging out of the bottom of
it. But actually, it's when we were talking about the movie the other day, you said something that was really interesting is that, because I said, and I was getting to this before and then we kind of got off track, but I said one of the things that kind of bothers me about the movie is that it would take me a while to get to the point where John Nada gets to, like, almost immediately, maybe an hour after he first puts the sunglasses on, like, he's shooting up.
Yeah, he's already running.
He's already, like, running around doing a shooting spree. Yeah. And we should say, too, that it's like, he shoots two cops. I mean, he can see that they're aliens.
Yeah.
You know, fair enough. But then, like, he goes into a bank.
With guns.
With guns. Yeah. And he's like, you know, and he says the famous line, you know, I've come here to
chew bubble gum and kick ass.
Yeah. You know, and I'm all out of bubble gum.
Yeah.
That's the famous line from that. And then he just starts shooting. Now, there are humans in this bank, too. Not everyone in there is aliens.
Right.
So I kind of feel like that was a tad irresponsible because, like, you could have, like, hurt some innocent people. Like,
well, it was the macho 80s.
I guess
so. It was the hyper macho. You see aliens, you just shoot them.
Yeah. I mean, I think that was kind of one thing that bothered me is it just seemed too quick. Like, that he just, like, went from, like, hey, look, I put on these sunglasses and there's aliens. And 5 minutes later, he's just, like, shooting shit up everywhere.
Well, at least it seemed that way in the movie. He was seeing the aliens. He was talking to the aliens and saying how ugly that they were. And then they reported him for being able to see.
Right, yeah.
The cops pulled up to him and said, look, maybe we can, you know, we can settle this peaceably. You know,
yeah.
There's to be something in this for you. In other words, the cops were asking him to sell out.
Right.
That he was going to join the team. And they were going to arrest him, and he didn't, you know, he's just kind of pig-headed about it. He didn't want to go with them, and it got into a fight. He got one of the cops' guns and just shot him.
Yeah.
Shot them both, and then he goes on a shooting rampage.
Yeah.
And to the people who don't have these glasses on, he just looks like a madman shooting the place
up. That's what I was thinking, because no one, I mean, other than like a small contingent of people, like the people that were in the church, like making the glasses and stuff like that, like a small band of rebels, nobody else knows that some of these people are aliens. So to their minds, like, here's just a crazy dude, like, walking into a bank and just, like, shooting people dead.
Right.
And, you know, and it just seemed like, yeah, you need to get rid of the aliens. Yeah, you need to do that kind of shit. But, you know, one, you could have accidentally shot some humans. You know, two, and you're scaring the shit out of everybody.
It's a movie, though. And there's, and Piper's just playing an everyman.
Yeah.
You know? And an everyman isn't necessarily the brightest man. You know, that's what's going on. So it was just a good
Although I have to say that, like, one of my very favorite things is, like, when he first puts on the glasses and he's kind of walking around and he goes in, like, a grocery store or a convenience store or something like that. And then he looks at, like, some politician on TV and he's an alien.
Yeah, he goes, I knew it.
He says, figures it'd be something like this.
Yeah, that's right.
And just like his tone, fucking cracked me up.
Figured it'd be something like this.
Yeah, that's just like his kind of deadpan tone. He's like, yeah, that's
now,
about
as a
it.
Side note, in the commentaries, I watched a commentary from Keith David, you know, who plays Frank in this. And Keith David was actually very suspicious when this movie came out. He liked it. You know, he says, this is a great flick, blah, 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 blah. And he goes, boy, it must have pissed off some important people because it wasn't in the theaters for very long.
Even though it was like the number one movie for, I think it was the number one movie for 2 weeks or 3 weeks or something like that when it first came out.
Keith David said that somebody up there didn't like that movie. They got it out of the theaters quick.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Yeah,
that's what he said.
It could be.
But, no, I'm just telling you what he said.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw that. I saw that too. But yeah, you know, it's... I think in the ensuing years, like I said, even though it was kind of a hit at the time, you know, it cost like less than $3 million to make. It ended up making about $13 million, I guess, at box office. So it might have made more sense.
You're not talking about a film here. You're talking about a flick. A flick that has a message. I love it.
Yeah, I really like it. There really is like some kind of
it has its own
vibe about it.
It has its own mojo.
It's a weird little movie. It's you know what I mean.
It's got the blues soundtrack going.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. It does have that bluesy soundtrack. But yeah, it just has this kind of cool little vibe that's kind of unlike most of Carpenter's other movies. I can't really think of one of his other movies that's that similar to it.
I don't know. I got it on Blu-ray. It still looks great. It stood the test of time.
Yeah, it really
still
does.
An excellent flick.
And like I said, it's really, I mean, despite not being as big a film, like another sci-fi film, like an Aliens or something like that, that like everyone's seen, it seems like a smaller film than that. But in a way, it seems like it's really kind of gotten into the cultural fabric in a way that maybe some other sci-fi movies haven't gotten into.
It lives on in InfoWars and Alex Jones. I think it does. No. I think that inspired a lot of what Alex Jones does.
Yeah.
I think it had to do with reptilians and all that.
Yeah. All right. And I guess that'll do it for our review of They Live, another John Carpenter movie. We really need to start doing some other directors.
We're talking about we did.
Well, yeah, but I mean, we've done so many John Carpenter. We've only done
one
David Cronenberg.
We've got some good movies.
I know, but we've only done one David Cronenberg. We need to do more David Cronenberg.
Well,
and I haven't even got to do any David Lynch. And David
but
Lynch
I gotta
is my
get
favorite.
More. I gotta get more Cronenberg movies. See?
Well, yeah, okay. Well, we
because I'm gonna buy it on Blu-ray. I gotta rebuild my Blu-ray arsenal up.
Your Blu-ray arsenal.
Yeah.
So remember, if you like the show, please remember to like, share, subscribe on all your social media, share with your friends, all that other stuff. And also remember that we have a Patreon at patreon.com/13oclockpodcast, I think. And so go and check that out. Also, if you want to give a one-time donation instead of a monthly donation like you do on Patreon, then you can go to the blog, which is at 13oclockpodcast.wordpress.com. And there's like a little PayPal link in the sidebar. So you can click on that and give us a buck or two or even more bucks if you want. You know, that's pretty cool. Like give a one-time donation for the show. And stay tuned for more movie reviews. And also stay tuned for our special Halloween episode coming up this Tuesday, which is going to be like all reader spooky stories, like ghost stories.
I've already seen the stuff that you put together. That's going to be awesome.
Yeah, reader personal experiences really and cool. Stuff like that. Yeah, and we have like kind of fun little video clips and all that kind of neat stuff. So keep an eye out for that. Also, keep an eye out for us at Spooky Empire this coming weekend.
Yeah.
We will be there selling books and on several of the panels and all kind of different
stuff.
Yeah,
I have a few fans showing up.
Yeah. So we will see you guys there. And until next time, see ya.